sky's so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. The number to call with your questions this morning, phone lines are open, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Top of the hour feature is the Norfolk Island Pine. Something very popular this time of year. Some people like decide that this is going to be their Christmas tree.
Turn on my
microphone. Mic is important.
Yes. I was trying to make it through a whole show with remembering every time to turn it on. But this Norfolk Island pine is one that's native to Norfolk Island in the southern hemisphere. It's north of New Zealand, several hundred miles. It's very isolated island. Mm-hmm. There's a family of trees that are the Araucaria family, but monkey puzzle tree is the other really famous member of it. Mm-hmm. But Norfolk Island pine's been planted in tropical and subtropical areas all over the world as an outdoor plant, and they're very beautiful. When you go to Hawaii and see pine tree looking trees, they're probably Norfolk Island pine. Because they grow quickly, they're just very adaptable, the wood is useful. Hawaii and some of the Pacific Islands have an industry have turned Norfolk Island pine wood, making bowls and plates and things like that on lathes and things. But at any rate, it is very popular as a houseplant, especially during Christmas. And when you are in garden centers and see a bigger pine-looking tree, and sometimes they'll even put white plastic ornaments on it, it's likely Norfolk Island pine.
Yeah, I mean, most of the time you see them in a container, and they're maybe 2-3 feet tall and quite a pretty little plant.
They are, and a lot of times they get thrown away after Christmas, but they actually are a very easy-to-grow houseplant.
Can't put it outside, though.
You cannot. You can transition them outside in the summer carefully and then transition them back to your house. And if you have a patio or something, I guess, I don't personally like to do that, not only just because the risk of scorching the needles when it goes outside and the needles dropping when you bring it in, but you always drag pests in no matter what, the aphids and the white flies and the spider mites and things of that nature. And so I don't like bringing my houseplants out.
In and out. Mm-hmm.
But you can do it.
How big do these get, though?
In the wild, 100,
very tall,
very
right?
Tall. But in a house, if you repot it every couple of years, eventually they will get anywhere from 8 to 12 feet very easily in a container.
And will they live in the house?
Absolutely. Just in a room with bright light. They actually can tolerate fairly low light levels, not in a really dark room. But if you have a room with west windows or south windows and they're off to the side, they do wonderfully.
So what happens if you want to keep it small, though?
Well, don't repot it very often. And so you might want to let it get a little root bound. And instead of repotting it every 2 years, maybe do it every 3. And then fertilize it so that you're maybe using half-strength plant fertilizer every other time in the summer instead of every time to maintain the health, but so it doesn't shoot a lot of new growth. Eventually, they will get big. I have seen these actually planted in the ground in Utah in big buildings. There is one here in Salt Lake that I used to deliver poinsettias to that had one planted in a big south-facing portion of the building that was just all glass. And it's 25 or 30 feet tall in there. It's grown up over 3 or 4 stories. That's the biggest one I've seen, but J&J Nursery used to have one in their greenhouses that had reached 20 feet in 10 years.
Yeah, one great thing about smaller plants like this, if you want to use them as Christmas trees, they're not as easy for your pets to tip over or, you know, wreak havoc with.
They're not, because of the pot.
Right?
Yeah, and so that will help. Sometimes cats like to scratch in the soil a bit or something, but pets seem to leave them alone as far as eating them.
Right. Yeah, it's become tough. You know, the more pets the young people get, the harder it is for them to have a Christmas tree in their family room.
It is. There's been a thing on TikTok and Instagram on some of the pet channels, I guess. So my age, but a lot of people are showing how they're trying to secure their Christmas trees from cats.
Right. It's a problem. The more pets we have, we kind of have to adapt to them because they become members of the family. But I had asked my son, are you guys putting up a tree? I'm like, no, we're afraid that our dogs are just going to pull that tree over. So
yeah, there was one that was kind of like almost a Mark Rober type channel, and they were seeing how difficult they could make it for the cats to get to the Christmas tree.
Oh, wow.
And they hung it upside down from their ceiling, and the cats had like jumped on the couch, jumped on a bookshelf, and done a 10-foot leap into the tree to get to it. Just cats are crazy, and animals are just crazy in general. It's funny how their curiosity gets them.
Yeah, well, especially if you have a new puppy around that's just going to pull the ornaments off the tree. I had some little ornaments on my tree, and you know, one of the puppies decided that they would rather eat that ornament. It was a little, you know, the ornaments are so cute these days. And it was a little mouse that my sister had sent me that was all dressed up. And, well, no longer has one ear on that ornament.
Puppy was hungry.
Puppy was very hungry. Anything else we need to know about these plants?
Don't throw them away if you can avoid it. You know, at least recycle them with green waste. But if you have the opportunity, and especially if you get one that's small, that's, you know, a foot or 18 inches tall, I would grow it as a house plant because I've grown them in the past. We have grown them at several locations, and they actually are quite easy to take care of.
Good. There's a good growing tip at the end of the article that you've put in here. Norfolk Island pines are often painted green during the holidays. What?
Well, to make them greener.
Have to be greener? They're pretty green.
They are, and they just make them look darker green. There are several brands of plant-safe paint, dye, I don't know what you want to call it.
Right.
It's really common with turf grass, but you can paint them, and it'll hold for 6 weeks at least and make them darker green.
Well, I think they're pretty green already.
So. And they're pretty on their own. They don't need makeup.
And you can take a look at this article. It's already up on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We're going to take a break. Come back with your calls and your questions. Phone lines are open. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you. Taking your calls. Phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. I wanted to go back to something we were talking about a second ago, and that was painting the tree green. So doesn't the paint hurt the tree?
No, the trees are fine, especially because they're dormant. But there are paints formulated to be plant safe, especially for turf. And so I've actually experimented a little bit when I used to work retail, and I used some turf paint to paint some spruce so that they were darker green, living Christmas trees. Mm-hmm. And then I leaf shined them because in the winter, sometimes spruce needles can kind of take on a dull grayish cast. And to overcome that, I used a houseplant product called Leaf Shine that you use if you do commercial plant maintenance that just makes them look pretty.
Right.
And so I used some turf paint and Leaf Shine on the spruce, and they sold first because they looked the spiffiest of all the trees in the area.
Talk a minute about Leaf Shine for indoor plants. Is it okay to use on all of your plants?
It is. It's just a product that for a few days, you know, up to a week, you spray it on the leaves, and it just, you know, it's amazing actually sometimes. I'll back up a little bit. What like malls and commercial buildings do to keep their houseplants looking nice. I mean, it's a big expense sometimes. And you will have somebody come in once a week with a cart with, you know, 50 gallons of water on it so they can water. And they come in and dust the plants. They will wash the leaves sometimes. But one of the things they can do is use a product called Leaf Shine that just really, in certain situations, gives those plants a really finished, good look to them. You know, a few of those plants already kind of have a waxy leaf or something. But
like
it's really
a rubber plant.
Yeah, rubber plant is something you could definitely use it on. And then it's used in sometimes in floral shops when they are doing arrangements with house plants that they'll just give it a light spray of Leaf Shine to make that arrangement look prettier. And so it's just, and it's in, it's not only shines up the leaves, but it acts as an anti, what's called an anti-desiccant, and it can help plants lose less water temporarily because it partially plugs up the, what are called stomata, where the gas exchange occurs. And so it will help a little with that too, but it's primarily used to just make houseplants look prettier.
Right. It looks, it works great. This is one though that social media has kind of taken off on, not on the Leaf Shine itself, but other products that you can use on the leaves. And this gets a little scary because then you can really hurt your plants.
So the worst thing I've ever seen is mayonnaise. There were people on YouTube and TikTok and Facebook pulling out the jar of Hellmann's mayo. And it doesn't matter the brand. You could get away with Food Club. And they were rubbing mayonnaise because it's mostly oil and egg. They were rubbing it and it was shining the leaves up, but that can be bad because it can introduce, because of the protein and oils in it, microorganisms may want to break it down. And so I never recommend using something like mayonnaise to shine up your plants, as crazy as it sounds.
Use the Leaf Shine.
Use Leaf Shine.
It's
or
not that expensive.
Even a similar competing product.
Okay, we have a couple of people asking about grasses. The first one is Randy in Oakley. He's asking about his Carl Forster grass. He says it's becoming empty in the center, and he's wondering if there's a way he can fix that.
It's just had it, and it's empty.
Stop
and hollow.
It.
And it's done. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, grasses have a tendency,
Randy.
Clump grasses, and or ornamental grasses are mostly what are called clump grasses, where they grow from the base and slowly expand out. And Carl Forster is one of the many. And over 4 or 5 years, as they grow outward, the middle dies. And so there's a few things you can do. One is in very early spring, when as soon as the soil is no longer frozen, get a sharp spade out and dig that grass out with as many of the roots as you can get and split it with a sharp knife or a spade into 3 or 4 chunks and just replant those chunks. And they will grow for 4 or 5 years before you need to do that again. Another thing I've seen people do is get a small, like 4-inch Carl Forster grass in the spring, and they will dig out the middle of the, where it kind of forms a halo, and they dig out the middle and they plant a new grass inside of it.
Wow.
So that it fills back in.
Okay, that sounds a little more adventurous.
It is, but either way, it takes some work to fix it. And it doesn't matter if they're Miscanthus or the Carl Forster or some of the perennial fountain grasses. All of them eventually will form a hollow in the middle and form kind of a halo or a ring. At that point, you know it's time to split the grass.
Okay. Next listener says they planted some grass plants in their parkway strip, and they want to know, do they need to cut them down or wait until spring, and how short should they cut them?
Either way, it's old school doctrine says to leave them through the winter to add ornament to your yard during the dreary winter.
At least the grass starts to fly around the yard.
It does. Well, and they get split out by snowstorms. Sure. If you get a really heavy, wet snow, those grasses fall down and they're much harder to cut back in the spring. I actually prefer to do it sometime in mid-November, and I use a very sharp pair of pruning shears or hedge trimmers, the electric or gas-powered hedge trimmers, and cut them down that way. And depending on the size of the grass, if it's brand new, 3 inches, if they're older, 6 inches to a foot.
Yeah, I noticed at the university campus. Well, first of all, I watched them blow out their sprinkler line, which was kind of fascinating. But the other thing I noticed is that they've neatly trimmed them all down. And like you said, depending on the size, 3 inches or 6 inches.
Yeah, I got in trouble up at USU for kind of using USU as an example for doing that to their grasses in the fall. It's like, you know, conventional wisdom says to leave them, and the head of grounds for the entire university was there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I have a bone to pick with you.
On that.
On that. But I totally understand that a university or an office park would do that out of efficiency.
Well, you need to keep the grounds looking good.
You do.
And when you've got all sorts of stuff blowing all over the place, it's really a problem.
It is, and it's a lot harder to clean them up in the spring.
Okay, my question is, though, where you do cut them down, that part still is kind of, I want to say, dead in the spring when the new grasses come up.
It will look a little dead until mid-May to early June sometimes.
Are you supposed to, like, pull out some of that dead later?
If you're going to, just
do
it in the fall.
Okay.
I just let the grass grow up through. But after three, four, 5 years, that grass is going to need to be split. And sometimes if you don't, they can die out. But if you will split them every 3 or 4 years, you can keep them going.
All right. And the taller ones are probably the bigger problem.
They are. The miscanthus that can get up to 6 feet, and a few of those giant, the Ravina grass, I think the state's made that noxious. There's a few others, giant miscanthus, that they are hard to dig and split. You need a very sharp shovel, and I've seen people actually buy inexpensive wood cutting blades for a sawzall or a demolition saw, mm-hmm. and saw them through them with a 6 inch or a foot long blade and split them that way, just knowing that the dirt will ruin the blade, but they only paid $3 or $4 for it.
All right. And if you are going to split those grasses, best time of year to do that?
Early spring.
And can you do that in the fall if you have to?
You can do that in the fall if you need to. JD, who's one of our, I guess, experts on grass, prefers the spring, but you definitely can do that in mid-November,
yeah,
too.
You don't want to do it in those hot, hot temperatures. But
you do not.
Yeah. One end of the spectrum or the other, right?
Yes.
All right. Our listeners are sleeping this morning.
Folks, wake up. Send us some texts. No, there's still so much we can talk about with the grasses and things that, you know, I think that they're a little underused in the landscape. They are becoming more common, but the ones that are used are way overused.
Ah, so which ones are the ones that you think are overused?
Carl Forster is one of them that is. It's the tall, narrow grass that you see in a lot. It's just a super low maintenance mm-hmm. plant. And I see it's really pretty. You know, you can use it as a hedge plant. There's some relatives I think are really popular or should become more popular that are variegated, that have kind of a silver stripe going down the leaves or the grass blades. There's one called Overdam. There's a few others that people could look at that have a very similar form, but they have the variegation. Miscanthus has kind of fallen out of use a little bit because it was just, you know, everybody had it. And so, but there are some newer miscanthus cultivars to get anywhere from 3 to 6 feet tall with interesting variegations. One that's not really new, but has become a little more popular, called zebra grass, that has a pretty tight form to it. And I think it's much better than the more common porcupine. That actually, I've got those reversed. You want the porcupine and not the zebra, because zebra falls over.
Oh.
And porcupine stays pretty tight.
Oh my gosh, I have more questions. Can you hold that thought for a second? We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. We'll come back with more on these different types of grasses. Number for you to call, 801-575-8255. Text us, 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. We're taking your calls at 801-575-8255. Blair is going to be up next. The number to text, 57500. Just finishing up our topic, we were talking about grasses, in the ornamental grasses in the yards. And one of the questions I had for you, Ton, was that I love purple fountain grass, but I've never found a perennial version of that. And you said, well, there are some out there now. Proven Winners has a couple of grasses out there that you know, might be sufficient for me.
Well, there used to be a pinnacetum, a fountain grass that had, it was the hardy fountain grass that had kind of a red tint in the fall, but I cannot find it.
Not
from Monrovia,
anymore.
Proven Winners, Heinz.
It doesn't live through the winter.
And it may have been pulled from the market for lack of hardiness or some other problems. And so, but there are many cultivars of hardy fountain grass, but they are very similar in look to the purple fountain grass, but they're generally green. And there are some that have a redder tint to them. We were just looking at a Proven Winners cultivar called, let's get to the right page. This one is called
Puppy Love.
And it has red, the seed heads on it that we really like have kind of a red tint. And it's supposed to go maybe a little bit red or at least get a red hue or blush in the fall, depending on the weather. And so the other one that I was looking at was also another Proven Winners selection.
Which had a very interesting seed head.
Yes, it's called Red Bunny Tails.
Almost looks like a flower.
It does. And this one does have a red flower head on it, but it's hardy down to about 0 degrees. And so Wasatch Front, up against a building, I think it would be absolutely fine. You know, if you are getting off of the Wasatch Front into the Cache Valley, Heber, places like that, it'd probably be an annual in mm-hmm. those situations.
All right.
But this Red Bunny Tails would be another one that should be available from local garden centers, you know, in the spring, that would be another alternative.
Right. And that eliminates the overuse of some of the other grasses
it
that
does.
You see. We all like some more unique things.
It's funny how the popularity of things kind of ebbs and flows, because 20 years ago, that red fountain grass just flew off the shelves. And last year, I actually had a hard time finding it. And my local garden center in Payson had one table that was about a 4x6 table, and that was it. You know, it used to be that when I worked in the green industry, you would sell hundreds and hundreds of them. And they've just kind of fallen out of use a little bit, but they're still out there. I like them. I'm going to use them whether people like it or not.
Well, I put them in a couple of my pots because I like the way they look, but, you know.
Yeah, and there are other things. You know, the Dracaena spikes used to be hugely popular. They're around, but you don't see them as much anymore. But there are more modern plants that have taken over. And I'm sure in another 10 or 12 years, these will go back
up into
popularity.
They say variety is the spice of life.
Yes.
All righty. Blair is on the line in Salt Lake City. Good morning, Blair. What was your question?
Thank you for taking my call. Speaking of red, I've had a Japanese red leaf maple, or trying to have one, in front of my house, kind of a foundation planting, and it has never done well. And I'm wondering if there's something else that, with some color that could replace that. That would give me, as I say, a little bit of color in the north side of the house in the shade. And that's the question.
Well, as far as replacing a Japanese maple, those are so finicky, as you have found. There's nothing that's going to absolutely replace that. Now, is it like a north or a northwest exposure to where it could get some afternoon sun?
No.
Okay.
It's just shade.
Well, unfortunately, I think that you may have to veer towards something like red-tip photinia for a little bit larger. It's a bush, but in the spring through midsummer, the new growth is it's just a beautiful red, and it fades to green. And so and it's evergreen, and so that would give you some winter interest. That would be one option. But I think that anything that has that red color would fade to a green so it could photosynthesize more efficiently. And so there are some red lace leaf elderberries that if it was a little sunnier might work. Red dragon, hazelnut would be another one you could try. But I think they would fade to green. And so maybe that Fraser's Photinia or some of the Japanese euonymus, as long as you don't have deer problems. There are several variegated Japanese euonymus that might work.
Well, thank you for the suggestions.
All right. Appreciate your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, needs a refresher on how to take care of Christmas cactus and wants to make sure that they know how to get them to bloom again and again.
Some of them won't after 6 or 8 weeks. Some will, but keep the Christmas cactus adjacent to a very drafty window. something, you know, like a big deck door, or especially if you're in an older house, a front room window, that you don't want it touching the window, but you want it within a few inches because those branches need to drop to around 50 to 55 degrees every night for 8 to 10 weeks. And what will happen is you'll start to see bud formation on that side of the plant. And when you see dozens of those flower buds form, you turn the plant 180 degrees and you keep doing that all winter long, and that will keep it blooming.
So I mentioned that I have one right in my entry, right next to the panes on the glass there, and one in my bathroom, which seems to work really well. Now, how do we take care of it, though? How often do they water it?
Because it blooms in the winter, you actually want to fertilize it during the winter, because it is actually expending a lot of energy to make those flowers. And so you would use a houseplant fertilizer. Every time you water, I would use half strength just to keep the nitrogen levels up, but not so that it's trying to grow really fast in the middle of the winter when there's a lack of sunlight. And then even through the spring when it's shooting its new growth, because it will put on 3 to 6 inches of growth in the spring, you need to continue to use that half strength house fertilizer. And if it's looking a little anemic, you may use it full strength a few times and then back it off to half. And then through the middle of the summer, they slow down a little bit and you can back off on the fertilizer a bit then. But in the fall, especially in October, back with a half strength houseplant fertilizer.
Special watering?
No, just when it needs it. They actually can dry out a little bit between irrigations, not bone dry, but the way to tell with these is that if you observe the soil, it'll turn kind of a light brown color, and it'll actually start to draw away a little bit from the edge of the pot because it's not hydrated. And so as soon as you see that soil drawing away from the edge of the pot, it's time to water.
You mentioned they don't all rebloom. Is there a way to make sure you get one that reblooms?
A lot of it's the luck of the draw. Every once in a while, you'll see a description on one that says freely blooming, but it is the luck of the draw. The more modern hybrids seem to bloom a lot more freely. You know, 50 years ago, which seems like a lot of time, but it wasn't. You know, 50, 60, 70 years ago, they would bloom for 4 or 6 weeks and be done. But they've done a lot of crossing, especially between Thanksgiving and Christmas cactus, and some of them will bloom the entire winter.
All right. Next listener is Dee in Midvale, and Dee would like to know, can you divide hosta in the spring just when it's starting to pop up?
Yes, you can. When they are about a half of an inch above the soil, you can actually split them then. It's a little scary because they're actively growing, but you can do it.
Next listener says, is it a bad idea to trim rose bushes right now?
Just prune anything that looks like it'll break in the snow away. Otherwise, leave them alone.
Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Jeff, you'll be up next. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Text us, 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton with you, taking your calls and questions this morning. Let's go back to our phone lines. Jeff is in Mapleton. Good morning, Jeff. What was your question?
Good morning. I have some acorns that came. My mom collected some acorns at Stanford University about 30 years ago and planted a tree or a couple. And I have one growing in my yard now that's maybe 30 feet tall. And I would like to plant some of its acorns and try to make another tree from, you know, the tree that my mom Anyway, I wanted to know if you could give me some tips on how to select the best acorns. I've heard that, you know, you can throw in water, get the ones that sink, I guess. I don't know if you had any tips. It's not a bur oak. It's more like a columnar oak, but anyway.
It could be any number of species, just because there's 30 or 40 species native of oak native to the East Coast. It's probably in the what's called the white oak group, which would include English oak, American white oak, bur oak, swamp white oak. There's many others if it's been doing well. And so it might be American white oak, or it could be English oak, because those are very commonly grown. The seeds from that oak tree will come back as a hybrid between the genetics from the tree and locally grown oaks. And it could be, it's crossed with English oak, bur oak. It's crossed maybe even with our native gamble oak, which is another white oak group species. And so those, what I'm trying to say is those seeds will be very variable in what will grow back, but they should be fairly vigorous and actually grow faster than the parent plant once you get them established due to hybrid vigor. And so what you would want to do is collect the acorns in the fall and inspect them, because there is a weevil that will feed on acorns. It will bore through with a 1/4 inch or a 1/16 inch wide hole and eat out the middle of the acorn, and those are the ones that will float. But you can look at them, and if they're heavier, then those are the ones you're going to plant. And there's several things you can do. You could just get an area of your yard and just, you know, prepare the soil and put those acorns every 4 inches or, you know, 5 inches in the soil on centers, and cover them with an inch or two of soil and let them sit over winter. And over a period of 1 to 2 years, you know, some of them require more, but they should, at least some of them should start to germinate. Something else you can do is build a raised bed, 6 inches to a foot tall, put a good loose soil in there, put the acorns in the fall. And the reason, the advantage to the raised bed is that the ones that will germinate are going to be easier to carefully dig out and transplant into new pots so that you can continue growing them. But those are a couple simple methods.
Okay. I thought about along those lines, I was thinking maybe getting small, you know, getting those seeds that pass the float test or fail the float test, and then put the seeds maybe in 3-inch pots or something with potting soil.
No,
and then,
don't use 3-inch pots, because the roots are going to go deep. And so you need something 6 inches, a foot tall. You know, probably 6 inches at least. There are actual tree pots for, there's pots for tree seedlings you can use. And the other thing is those seeds need what's called a cold stratification. You can't just plant them and expect them to grow. They need to be in a cool, wet, moist environment. And so that's why they need to be outside. So if you wanted to do that, what you could actually do is get them in something like that, you know, these taller pots, and then just dig a hole in the ground so that that container is only an inch or two above ground, and just put them in the soil. Make sure they stay wet over the winter, but not waterlogged, and then let Mother Nature do her thing. So it's just, I didn't mean to poo-poo on you. It's just the 3-inch pots would be very bad.
Yeah, I was just, when you said that, it kind of dawned on me that I've had a couple come up that I've tried to transplant, but the root really is deep. I mean, it fell down in a crack, and I had to dig, and then, you know, and I wasn't sure that I got enough of the root. And then, you know, I know that, you know, I've heard that it's, you know, really difficult to try to transplant the scrub oak, what we call the scrub oak. But anyway, I tried a year ago. I gathered a bunch up, put them in the fridge, then put them in the freezer for a couple weeks or whatever. But I took them and put them in like a Ziploc bag with some moist potting soil. And, you know, and I thought, well, I'll check them every few weeks or so to see if any of them have just sprouted. Like, I've done that with avocado pits before. Just take a bunch of them and throw them in some stuff, and then replant the ones that, you know, that actually grow.
Yeah, and the avocados would work. And I'm sorry, we're getting a little short on time. Okay. And big, avocados are tropical, so they don't need that stratification, or the vernalization. But the oaks, you're on the right path with the moist potting soil in the fridge, and you would leave them in there for 3 to 6 months. And then plant them if you didn't put them outside. And that may work. I mean, you can look up, and it would probably work even with Gamble's oak, but you can look up what are called propagation protocols. And I would just look up maybe American white oak or English oak and look up some propagation protocols, and it'll tell you how online how to stratify those seeds to get them to germinate.
Okay, excellent. Well, I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Look forward to it on Saturdays. And anyway, have a happy holiday.
You too.
And I'll bring you a tree if any of them grow.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. Sounds like a lot of work.
All right. Merry
Christmas to you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Next listener, Ton, says, we were talking about grasses. They say they have spikes in some of their pots that are still looking great. Wondering if they'll last all year long.
No, they won't. Once we start getting below about 28 degrees consistently, they are done. They are very warm Mediterranean climate to tropical plants, and so they could put them in the garage and keep them watered, and they would overwinter in the garage just fine.
All right. Next listener says, what is a good grass for a high traffic area?
Super high traffic, there isn't one that will tolerate that.
Ooh.
But if they're walking back and forth all the time in the same path, there is no grass that will tolerate that condition. But if it's just that there's a lot of soccer or sports or a lot of garden parties, then turf type tall fescue is really good. Or some of the Kentucky bluegrasses.
All right. Need to take a break for the top of the hour news. We'll be back with more on the KSL Greenhouse.